Now, with my memory, I did graduate from college, and I did get my master's degree, and I did get my PhD, and I did get straight A's in school, but I also learned that I could pay other people to do my work. Isn't that not how it works in the real world? How many of you are business people? When you don't want to do something, don't you pay somebody to do it? But doesn't your business profit from it? Don't you make the most money? That's how I did school. Worked really well. That's in fact how I taught all my children from a very early age, and that's what they all do. And they all get great grades. And they're brilliant people because everybody thinks they're brilliant, so for they get treated brilliant, therefore they act brilliant, the world believes you're brilliant, they are brilliant. It's an amazing thing how that works. When I did my master's degree, I channeled my thesis. I just laid around talking into my tape recorder, and then I paid somebody because I'm talking, obviously, is my favorite thing. I'm not very fond with writing. I'll make little notes so I at least don't repeat myself, but I'm not really fond of writing, and so I like chatting. And so I just sat there and chatted into a tape recorder and then paid a transcriber and then paid somebody to edit it down. And it ended up, it was my words, but it was all different than I had said it. But it was still the same context. And then I went to the library and I looked for a tan person because tans really love doing research. And since I'm able to see that, I figure I'll take advantage of that. Here's this person with all that. I like doing it all through the steps and stages. And the library is my home. I know every single book. I memorized the Dewey Decimal System a long time ago. So I paid that person $2,000 to do footnotes that matched what I said, and they did. And so the team approach created this thing. So if you're limiting yourself to how it should be, if you're shitting on yourself, you're in trouble. And you need to pay attention to all of that. How many of you were asked what your grade point average was in high school lately? Yeah. Is that really as important as shitting on yourself? Yes. I usually will say it other ways, but yeah, shitting on yourself. So, yeah, shoulding.
Like you should or should not.
Yeah, I should do this and I should have done that. So in this world of how many of you were asked what your grade point average is lately? Remember when, like, you were getting bribed for that? You couldn't go out and have a dance for that reason. Your whole world was going to crumble. You didn't get to kiss your boyfriend for that. These grade point average things were in charge of your life. It's ridiculous. So watch, that's the same as that I need to eat right or know right. Watch how it all carries forward. And that memory stuff that keeps tying into it is very often the fears of losing your memory is really about self-esteem or personal power or will I survive. And you were told if you didn't remember things or didn't get good grades, you're not going to survive. It's exactly what we're telling our children today. You know, they're going to take over the world. America's not going to be the superpower. Who gives a rat's behind? It's not a superpower anymore. It isn't. It's an illusion. We talked before about the victim, persecutor, rescuer triangle. Watch out for that. You guys grew up in, for most of you, I grew up in Italy, but I came to America when I left home at 13, so I'm part of it here. I grew up in this victim, persecutor, rescuer triangle. America's the rescuer of all rescuers in the world. And the way the victim, persecutor, rescuer triangle works is if the rescuer goes out and saves the victim from the persecutor, the victim gratefully lets them do it, gives them all the stuff, weighs them down with all the energy of it all, and then goes out and gets victimized somewhere else. Because how arrogant of us as a rescuer to assume we know better for that person as though we have our lives perfect. So while they're going off somewhere else, they also give us a kick for good measure on the way by. You know, when you go and rescue somebody, you're disempowering them. You're actually thinking you're hot stuff. And so you guys are in a country that talks about being hot stuff, wants to rescue everybody, and they got taught in the way of getting your truth. So you hang out that sign that says, rescue me. And so your guilt, and I just love being the first in line pulling up next to them. I roll down the window and have some of the greatest chats. I'm not going to give them any money, but I really enjoy the conversations I've had with these. There's some pretty amazing people there. And what I believe they need more than anything else is acknowledgement. Money's not going to fix it. So acknowledge them. Acknowledge yourself. They're you. In this world about rescuing, we're all getting set up in America's... Should I wait for you while you turn it over? So in America, we're being set up for this country that doesn't have enough energy to rescue itself anymore. And if you expect with all these floods and changes and earthquakes and... California's got to be bankrupt by next year. I've been saying to you guys for 2 years, watch out for 1996 with California's finances. And Orange County went bankrupt last year, and we flooded from head to toe. Water tables will fall. Wait till the snow does its thing. May 6th. I'm just looking for May 6th of this year. I'm not much of a future predictor. Better get your seatbelts on. Yeah, I don't. I just think there's going to be a big shakeup, and I've been feeling this. And I'm not Mr. Scallion. It's just my feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it's beautiful. I believe that we'll have all the skills to handle it, but it's going to be a major shakeup. There's major changes. And it's about letting go of our attachment to money and our attachment to food, shelter, and clothing, to political views, any system. Every system's inherently doomed to fail because it takes a side or it represents a view. And there isn't any right view. That's that joke about I once got an F on a test for my opinion. And so anything that holds a certain view or opinion is going to be challenged. And that's about what is the right way or what's the proper way. And so in holding on to memory, to remember who you are so you can identify yourself, that's a trick. And it's very exhausting to hold the identity you believe you are based on your past experiences, or you're all a bunch of Skinner's rats, you know. Who you are today, a lot of your behaviors are based on the reinforcements you got in the families you were with and the cultural situations. They're finding out with twins, if you take them and put them in different families, they have some of their own interconnected parts, but for the most part they're having totally different behavior systems, different accents or different styles and different beliefs. And so the memory stuff that you're going through is actually very exciting. It's the same as that third level of in truth, when you start getting into the disease state and you start getting so exhausted you just don't care anymore. You finally made me so mad I have to tell you how I really feel. Well, the next stage is a lot of people are making themselves so exhausted they can only be who they really are. They don't have the energy to tolerate any more input anymore. They don't want anybody bothering them. And when you get to that point, you start being more real. And the identity stuff really exhausts you and weighs you down. And for me personally, I just because it's my mirror, I watched this wonderful thing on Einstein. Was I watching that with you? This wonderful chat on Albert Einstein. It was only yesterday, right? Last night. It feels like a month ago, you know. That's sometime in the past, I saw this thing about Albert 12 hours ago, huh? Okay. Was it last night?
Couple
days, good. And Albert's this big time. Well, it's nice to have a memory around. Albert's this big time violet with some green, and violets are the visionaries on the planet. And Albert Einstein totally did everything channeled. He always says in his literature, I envisioned, I imagined, it occurred to me. He never says I think, therefore I am. I think, therefore I am is the truth. I think, therefore I'm limited. That I am. But when you don't think, then you're everything. And his whole stuff was about, he wore that same sweater for 30 years. He really believed in the simplicity of stuff. He didn't believe in any of all this extrinsic energy. And he just said all the answers are in nature. The guy is very right on and very wise. Yet that really challenges a lot of our beliefs about food, clothing, shelter, money, comfort, and Einstein stuff is coming around. This is the times that he was talking about are beginning to happen now. And so I thought it was very timely that they had this chat about him, because the man was a few years ahead of his time, and now we've caught up with that time. And if any of you have the time, if you are readers or viewers, you might want to check into what Albert had to say, because it'll give you a hint as to what's going on. One of the things he chatted about was, if we do explode that bomb, it's going to change weather patterns. It's going to change international politics. It's going to set in motion amazing global changes just from that one act of our arrogance. We're going to rescue the world from the Japanese by blowing them up. The rescuers set themselves up for big trouble. There's a lot of people really pissed now about that. Well, there's a lot of people pissed back then too. But even more so as we get into new climates of politics. So everything's changing, and all. So our memories of what was the right and wrong thing are even being challenged. You got, so you guys get to look at, are you willing to let go of what's right and wrong? Are you willing to let go of drinking bottled water after reading an article that says 90% of the bottled water is the same as out of your faucet? Or do you think you're the one person that has that 10% chance? There's a bunch of people in here that might drink bottled water and might want to look at that. I prefer just drinking out of the faucet, even if it kills me. At least I'm going to die with a few extra bucks in my pocket. Yeah. Well, I don't drink bottled water, so I do have it around for people in my life that like it, but it doesn't interest me. If it doesn't taste good, I'll find another version that tastes better. So you need to know who's chatting with you about memory and stuff. It's really important to look at your attachments to your life and this longevity, all this stuff about living longer. Why live longer? Why not just keep recycling? How many of you believe you've been here more than once? Then why are any of you like worried about doing it again? Is it like you think this you're missing out? Or that it has to be that if you consciously choose to recycle and stay conscious about it versus it's something that surprises you or happens or it happens too soon and the shock of it happening too soon makes you come back in an unconscious fashion, if you stay awake and consciously choose to recycle, you can stay wide awake and have a really great time here. But that's up to you. And for those of you who want to live longer but living longer have younger bodies, why not just keep dying at 35 and keep recycling? Then you get, number one, to live longer because you consciously choose to have an unlimited number of lifetimes, and you get to have all these experiences. And I believe you can bypass childhood if you want. You can do walk-in stuff. Come back as a walk-in. If you want to come in at 20, make a contract with somebody and walk in at 20. And for those of you who don't know about walk-ins, there's a number of books about it. So you can be one of those persons. Some people love childhood, some people hate it. Most of you had your adulthood first and you're having your childhood now. Yeah. Have you figured that out? Yeah? Yeah? That's a truth? Yeah, I heard that. So a couple little things. I don't know who said this, it was some famous person. People fear change because it undermines their security. And I liked that very much. There is no such thing as security. You guys are getting that wonderful privilege of recognizing all these people who thought the people in Hatton had security. They had a house and they had that, and now they have nothing but water damage. We were at Britain's Hardware Store right before we came here. I just love how the universe gives me these little... And some guy in the floral department was bitching and moaning because the water totally took out his pool, took out his heater system, but just missed his house. But because it didn't get his house, the insurance didn't cover anything. But it did thousands of dollars in damage. So his security, I'm insured. Well, sorry about that. It didn't help him a bit. He didn't have the complete insurance plan, which is like this. So he was like pissed, and I don't blame him. You know, he thought he had security. I have the house, and my payments are insured, and my house is insured. But he did that. The insurance company always has that fine print, you know, even if it comes up to an inch. When I was in Hawaii, that's when all the lava was taking out the black sand beach and Kalapana and all the houses there. And I have a couple of acquaintances that have houses there, plus a bunch of strangers, that the lava literally went around their house. And so if you go over there, they're still there. These houses are surrounded in lava, like they surrounded their houses with white light, and they hum, 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 hum. And they did all this perfect stuff, except they didn't think of one thing. The minute they saved their houses and did all this miraculous stuff, they can't get to their houses. And the insurance won't pay for you if you can't get to your house. Your house is still there. So there's lava two stories high around their house, and you can't get in and out of it. They own these little castles that you can't get to that are totally surrounded by this ugly, hot, boring lava. Like, what a view. Oh, cool. There's new pores in the lava today. I just had to giggle. I just went there and said, that's security. And so memory also, this all really has to do with memory. We're coming back to it over and over. It has to do with what we're holding on to these realities for. So here are these people who did a really good job saving their place and remembering how to do it all right, and it still kicked them in the butt. And so it's really frustrating. And to even count, I'm sure that we all know some people over there who thought they had good insurance and it did get their house. And there's going to be some interesting stories to come from what insurance they really did have and what it does. There is no such thing as insurance. There is no insurance in your reality system. Eating right, living right, spiritually being right is a lie. They're all just systems designed to help you feel secure. And there is no such thing as security. It's an illusion. Fearlessness. When I studied philosophy in university, the philosophy class, they want to talk to you about what is justice or what is truth. The Plato and Socrates, they just spent volumes talking about it. Well, I knew the answer to what is truth is fearlessness. The fearlessness to just be who you are no matter what. Reap the rewards, suffer the consequences. This is who I am. This is where I'm going. This is it. This is heaven on earth, to just fully be me, the screw up that I am right here and now, and it's okay. The freedom to be the screw up that you might be. To actually revel in it, maybe. Have fun with it. The trick with trying to eat perfect, look perfect, be perfect, and all that is I have some clients. I had this really fun client who came in the other day who was an anorexic, and her boyfriend was telling her she's too skinny, but she became an anorexic because she used to be too fat, and her boyfriend before used to tell her she's too fat. And the setup about looking good or right for someone else has totally got her in the loop, and so now she's really, she hates food, she doesn't know what to do about it. Should I go do food? But then what's this happy medium? You guys all have you ever not, you thought you had the perfect thing, then you get home and it's not the perfect thing, or your clothes aren't just right, or that accessory doesn't match. And there's all, in fact, Tom's not wearing his purple shirt today. I'm like, my whole reality got trashed. I've never not seen him in a purple shirt. And he wore green today just to screw up my day. It trashed my reality. It's the truth. Do you ever wear anything but purple? Except when you see, I mean, when he sees me, it's like purple. He did it. He knew it would drive me nuts. So it's funny, we get used to seeing certain things. So what happened is I saw Tricia walk in the door, and I was going to, well, where's Tom? He's standing right next to her. But I'm real visual, and so I was looking for purple. I just assumed, you know, it got me. If you assume, it makes an ass out of you and me. A-S-S-U-M-E. Yeah. And that's right, that's true. So I'm making him shy. He's really shy, I apologize. I'm getting all the shy people today. But it really, it got me. So it catches us. You got to really be on your toes and watch out for how you're defining your reality, what you think is a constant, what is real. My security base was, whenever I see Tricia, there'll be this big purple thing next to her somewhere. And it wasn't there, so my life... It's funny how the little things that happen that you count on, and that can be different. And I mean, I'm exaggerating on, you know, the life, but I really did look for you, and you weren't there, but he was right there. When we see what we believe we're going to see, so there was Tom, and I didn't see him. And it's not as though he isn't like my size. We both are big persons. Make sense so far? So we're needing to look at what security is, what your identities are, about where you're going. Where do you really think you're going? Why are you doing all this? Why are you even here today? What would you like to have happen today? Are you expecting it all to turn into white light as of this chat? That you are all light beings in search of a human experience. You are not humans in search of a light experience. You always are angels. You always are light. This is a great privilege to get to play here and be unconscious and dense, and everybody's in a hurry. You guys got put on vacation, and here you are sitting in your favorite vacation spot bitching about it. And it's like, where are you going to go? Run back to the office? Because that's your other option. The chat, my favorite chat about it is a story, and some of you have heard me tell it, but it does a really good job explaining it. A year and a half or two, could have been last week ago. Felt like a year and a half. I think I've said this story enough times that time's flied, so it was that long. I measure it by how many times I've told this story. There was a half-hour TV show with Ron Glass playing the devil. So here's this really charismatic black man with his red face and his cute devil horns, and he looks real devilish. And Kevin, did you see this? Somebody in the room last time saw it. I wasn't sure. And so he has his, and he has black sunglasses on, and he's got attitude. He's got the whole, they did the whole black attitude part. And he's got a t-shirt. Every time they cut to him, back and forth between this other person and him, he has a different t-shirt on. And it always says, burn, baby, burn, I'm bad. Yeah, I know it all, I see it all, I am it all. And he's just got this whole attitude, and he's relentless. And the guy, and it's just a little Rumpelstiltskin story. And here's this white guy, this sickly-looking white guy. And so they really exaggerated this. And he's going to give him three chances to guess one thing that the all-knowing, all-present, and all-seeing, and all-being devil can't do. Otherwise, he's going to get his soul. So he relentlessly comes after him, and they keep flipping back and forth with all the different t-shirts, relentless attitude. You just get so exhausted with this guy. And so he does his first try, he does his second try, and he comes back for the third, and he goes, okay, you're mine. The guy goes, you know, I just have no idea what it is. I'm just so sick and tired of you. I just wish you'd get lost. What's the one thing an all-knowing, all-present, and all-seeing, and all-being person can't do? Get lost. And you, I imagine you guys have heard, I once was lost, but now I'm found. I believe you're all on vacation, and the one thing God can't do, the gods that you are, is get lost. And so you created a space in which you could lose yourselves. And everybody's in a hurry to find themselves just to get back to being bored with being found again so they can go and get lost again. It's that whole thing about wanting to be old and living forever when you could just keep being 35, if that's your magic number. Some little hints. I believe God stands for God over defining. If you're going to become God, you simply quit defining yourself, and in definition, you instantly limit everything. So God, they say, is unlimited, right? So therefore, undefined. So God over defining. But it's real interesting that all the important things have three-letter words, like G-O-D and C-E-O and F-B-I and C-I-A and was it V-I-P and R-O-B. I knew what I was doing when I created this name. I wanted to be one of them three-letter words. I didn't want to be a four-letter word. Of course, my last name has an extra B, so it is a four-letter word. So that's why you guys get a three-letter word who acts like a four-letter word. God with attitude. So it's important just to look at all the little hints. They're surrounding you all the time. And all these people are surprised if you don't have a middle name so you can do initials. Have you not noticed that? Like, if you have a first name and a last name, they are desperate for you to have a middle name. They want you to have a G-O-D or a S-A-G or whatever your initials are going to be. It's almost like, and if you don't have a middle name, thank goodness some of you can get married and add another name. But then be careful, you might turn your initials into a four-letter word if you have a middle name. Watch out for those hyphenated things, they'll get you in trouble. These are just observations to pay attention to, because I believe that memory is really attached to definition, and that definition is what you use to stop being God, and when you define things, you separate yourselves. That's like defining 2 plus 2, and how far apart does 2 plus 2 then become 4 or become everything? Or in what definition am I a breatharian, a vegetarian? Who are you? Like, hi, my name's Robin, what do you do? Well, I would hope that any of you I do that with says, well, right now I'm just shaking your hand. Like, and give me a time, give me a place, give me a location. Well, at 8:30 this morning, I was waking up. At 8:35, I was in the bathroom. 8:33, I was having breakfast. Give me a point in time. And it's real imperative in the world. If you're going to define yourselves, stay in the moment with it. And ask them, well, if you want definitions out of the moment, then you need to define that moment you're talking about. And it's highly likely in a week or two, if you guys go with this, that when they ask you, you'll say, well, I can only tell you about now. I don't remember this morning. It's like, who cares? Who you are today is really all that person gets anyways. Who you were that moment isn't relevant. Chuck and I were setting up the room before you guys got here, and with Mark, and we were putting out all the chairs. And we're three pretty tiny guys, and we were making a lot of noise. So the business downstairs was having its roof shake because we were having a little elephant attack up here. And actually, I thought we were being quite delicate for three sizable men. And we were opening up some of the chairs and setting them. So the person from downstairs came up and said, and what she was really coming to bitch about was we're making too much noise and we're shaking her bowl. But she didn't really say that. Her first question is, who's in charge here? And what are you doing here? And so my answer to her, and this drove her nuts, by the way. The answer was, well, I'm going to give a talk at 4 o'clock. And what do you do? I said, well, I won't know until 4 o'clock. And she just went bonkers. And these guys got to watch her just go, well, okay, goodbye then. Man, she was an hour and a half ahead of my schedule. In fact, and the answer for most of you guys, if you've known me, is I never know what I'm going to talk about till 2 minutes to four anyway. So that's when I start going, okay, I think we'll talk about this. And so if she'd have come back in an hour and 52 minutes, maybe I could have answered it for her. But at the moment, that was like a whole nother day to me. And you'll find, and I was telling her my truth. I wasn't trying to piss her off, though I seemed to enjoy doing that, but it wasn't my intention. She asked me a question that was the only appropriate answer for. I really had no idea what I was going to do. I do know that I had anticipated standing here talking to you. I knew that much, so that's what I told her. Unless the world came to an end, that was pretty much on schedule. But what I was going to talk about, and the other part was, she really didn't want to know anyways. But I would have told her just to drove her nuts. If I'd have had an agenda, I'd have told her because she would have hated it anyways. Yeah. And that would have given me more fun because she wanted the explanation. I said, no, you don't get one. Not unless you pay $10. So even in the moment, we got to have this exciting experience so that here we are. I'm going to talk about staying in the moment, talk about memory. And so this wonderful example from down below us, down there, comes up here. Maybe she'll come up. So when you start staying in the moment, you'll find you'll get many, many pop quizzes about people who are going to want to trick you, and they try to catch you off guard. Chuck was just waking up. Mark just had a wonderful cigarette break. He was really having a good time. He was all happy. We were doing chairs, and so she surprised us. But I got brought up, as most of you know, by the pro from Dover, so I'm used to surprises. My mom was the expert of surprises, so this lady was a wimp, you know. But I watched her catch these guys off guard, and so I just diffracted the energy over here, but they got to see how off guard they were. And so they got to see, no matter what, I need to be in the moment and paying attention, because they could have, one of them was in charge, she'd have trashed them. She was hunting for bear. Was that loaded for bear? Is that what they say? Except she picked the wrong bear. I'm a bad dude. The fun part is, when you just stay in your truth and stay in the moment, this person really tried to draw us into a drama. It was impossible. There was no drama to be had. Yes, we made noise. I apologize for the noise. Thank you very much for sharing. We will attempt to be less of our volume and we'll act like fairies and we'll see if we can lighten up. We've always been talking about lightening up. Maybe we could actually do it. You would have thought when she saw, she'd have just turned around and gone downstairs and had her answer, right? It wasn't as though we had these 105-pound little pixies out here putting out the chairs. But when you tell your truth and when you stay in the moment, people are going to challenge you. And your challenge is to stay to your truth. And when you stay in your truth, she wanted an argument desperately. There was none to be had because I wouldn't participate with her in the setup. What are you doing? What's it about? None of your fucking business. Pay your $10, find out. But that she didn't want to know that. She just wanted ammunition. When you stay in the moment, it's a very brave thing, and you'll find that all this stuff you're storing about who I am, what I do, you'll start trying to apologize for yourself. Well, I'm really a nice person, and you know, we're going to do this really fun stuff, and you should come, you'll really like it. No. So what we're chatting about here, really understand, is a lot of the time, it's that security base again. Can I stay safe? Will my memory of who I am and how other people relate to the who that I am today keep me safe? Is it valuable? Will I be okay? The thing is, if it's not the real you, no matter how perfect you do that version of you or how perfect you do the things you do, you won't be satisfied. It won't be fulfilling. You won't feel whole. You will feel lonely. You'll feel like you need other people to give you feedback because you're not autonomously self-fulfilling yourself. You're going to need all those feedback loops to help you decide who you are. We talked earlier about what relationship is. She was a relationship for us. She's showing us how we relate to ourselves. So I wasn't going to date her, but it was an opportunity to see how I related to me and how Chuck related to her and how Mark related to her. We got to see, and we all have different versions. And once we do our homework on it and you hold your space, there's not much that can happen. Then I can have a partnership with her. I'm totally fine with how we related. She got launched because she wanted to have an argument, and I frankly wasn't in the mood, but when I am, it could have been really fun. But it just wasn't time. Haven't any of you ever gotten into an argument just for the sake of doing it, and then when you thought it didn't matter anymore, you stopped it? And that other person just was like... they wanted to come to some conclusion, but there's never a conclusion to be had. It is whatever it is. And if you stop when you feel like stopping, all of a sudden you're a bad person because you didn't finish the game. You took away their security. They believed it needed to go through certain steps and stages, and they have to stomp out or have the last word, or you need to tell them how right they are, or they think how right you are, then it's over. There's an agreement. It doesn't have to be that way. Memory stuff, please look at it for those of you who are having it slip and slide. See why it is you might think it's important, what it is it does for you. These really cool tools called computers. My memory's in that closet. I have this $4,000 memory in there. I bring it with me wherever I go, because I can open it up and I can look up all the things I need to remember that I thought were important. I typed them in there. It lets my brain relax. The funny part is, more often than not, I find I use it less and less. I might use it to do addresses now, because at least that's where you guys think you live, and if I need to mail you something, at least I can find where you think you are. And my computer seems to think the same thing, so we have some agreement happening. And as long as the postal system, which isn't always in agreement with what my computer says and you say, more often than 80% of you will get what we agreed on, and the other 20% they send to Timbuktu, because the post office believes you live there. So even in your security of having your address posted perfect and everything's just right, it doesn't mean you're going to get it. There's always these interesting middle parties that are designed to switch and change things. But somebody, we were just chatting, I don't know if Chuck was it, you at lunch, we were talking about when you would say something to somebody and they would hear you totally different. Or I even have an example. What's your name? Elizabeth. Yeah, Chuck doesn't remember. That's good. I have to put that on tape. So Elizabeth caught me up at the gap. And for those of you who have seen my little notice I put out, it said, you know, it's tuning fork time. Because mostly what I like to do, it's not this rhetoric I give. I'm just trying to keep your brains busy with entertainment or fun stuff so that we can just operate at a certain frequency so that you can have a flushing, some experiences of different dimensions. So we're jumping through different feelings or different frequencies. But Elizabeth thought we were going to work with tuning forks. Yeah. And you know, when you read it, if you don't know who I am or what the way I talk, it makes perfect sense. So here I thought I worded it perfectly and all that. For myself, I did. But Elizabeth goes, now, when are we going to do the tuning forks? It's absolutely the perfect thing to ask me, because the way I have it up there, if you read it, it says it's tuning fork time. Makes total sense to think of it that way. So everybody's going to hear.
Rob said,
I am the tuning fork, yeah. I volunteer. So we do have a tuning fork, but it's only one octave, you know. Maybe I am a whole set of them. I just haven't unraveled yet. No matter how perfect you try to make your security or do your definitions, your G-O-D stuff, it's totally up to interpretation of everybody. And so if you're going to define yourselves, if you're going to have an identity, if you're going to quit being God and decide to go to sleep and you're going to G-O-D yourself, you're going to get into definition, if you're going to define yourselves, then at least define yourselves as your closest truth to you. And that's a scary thing. Because the best you are is usually what you were when you were children before you got all the propaganda. Little kids lay there in what I call the give-it-to-me mode. You guys have heard me talk about this before. They just lay there, and everything goes through them like peas and corn. And that includes feelings, you know. They kick, scream, laugh, cry all in a half a second, like that one over there. You know, just totally everything's flowing through that baby over there, just going through. And that temper tantrum he had 5-10 minutes ago, do you see any residual effects of that? It was a totally happy kid. It's just an in-the-moment experience. That give-it-to-me mode, they just lay there, and then when it goes through, they go, okay, I'm ready for my next feeling. And if you're a parent and you try to get them to focus on you, their eyes are just like, look at me, I am looking at you. I'm Stevie Wonder. It's just all over. Because they're seeing all the things they need to see. They don't really care about seeing you. They can feel you there. They're probably seeing the light show that's around you. And they're enjoying that. In fact, when they look at you, you look at babies, look at you, they usually soft focus, and they hardly ever focus on you. They're focusing all around you, looking at all your assistants, looking at all your light shows. They're finding out if you're upset or not because they're looking for a little bit of red. They're seeing if you're being loving or not to see where the energy's coming from. You don't even need to tell them. They totally know what's going on with you. And here we are trying to get them to attention our reality, and we start making those children define their realities based on what we think they are. Oh, you're hurt now because you're crying, or you're hungry now. Why can't one just cry because it feels good? Haven't you ever had like a really good cry?
Yeah.
I would imagine children just cry because it feels cool. I watched my children, actually, well, don't they just sit there sometimes if you had kids, they may... and they just like make themselves cry. I've watched my kids all do that. They sit there and they kind of work their way up into it. Like, oh yeah, that's what a cry. And they didn't want anything or need it. They were experimenting. It's almost like that. If they knew that they could do it in front of a mirror, they'd do it in front of a mirror to see. Have you not witnessed that? And so we try to teach them, oh, crying means you'll get this attention, or crying means you're in pain, or crying is bad, so that all of a sudden all the really cool parts about crying, we get eliminated from. So many people can't cry now because it's supposed to be a bad or embarrassing thing. Never let them see you sweat, or don't let them know you're weak, you know, what kind of business dealings are those. It's just crying, folks. In fact, crying for most people is like going to the bathroom. If your body's full of toxins, you perspire. And if your bladder's full, you go to the bathroom. And if your emotional systems are full, you cry. And it cleanses you out and it clears the system. And that's all it is. It's a clearing system. And not a sad thing. If it's full of joy, we sometimes cry in great joy because that's as much joy as we can handle, as well as much sadness as we can handle. It's not about good or bad or right or wrong. So as you start looking at definition and what you attach your memory to, many times the memories you're holding on to are illusionary. They're not even what you think they are. I'm finding, Annie helps me with that all the time. You're feeling this. No, I'm not. Maybe I am. But I've learned now that, okay, I am, but I just don't know it. So I say, okay, I just don't know it. Maybe I'll know it later. That's why we do relationship. So that I can learn to relate to myself, I need feedback. Who am I? What am I? What am I doing? Am I really feeling this? Yeah. Don't we all get that from our partners or people we have in our... It doesn't have to be partners we live. It doesn't have to be romantic. It could be somebody in line at the bank. Get away from me. What? Well, you're in this bad mood. No, I'm not. I'm just standing here. I'm going to deposit money, actually. I've made a lot of money this week. Well, you're in a bad mood. Get away from me. It's mostly because they want to be in front of you. It's not that they're... You all felt that, right? That person in line at the... And we've been that person in line at bank ourselves. Get out of my way! I got people to see, places to go, things to do. So we all take our turns with all that. And so as we lock into memory and we look at what's important, I suggest just not being attached to memory. Now, that's my personal judgment. I'm not saying that it's some high truth. I don't believe there's any right or wrong way or any system, and I would never tell you what to do. I've just known that I've made it, even though it might look like a haphazard life, I've made it to this point, and I'm still alive, and I've done it being a complete ditz with no memory, and I actually have a degree or two under my belt, and I've had some amazing experiences, and I'm a total flake. And there are friends in here who know me will just be, and my poor secretary, Daisy, who's my other mom, she could just watch, she's over there just shaking her head going, oh my God. But then that's the fun, you can actually pay people. And she's as flaky as I am. She's just a couple steps behind me in flakiness. So,
yeah, but I tell the truth, I don't want to go to work.
That's it. Yeah, and when she doesn't want to go to work, I say, fine. Don't work. Yeah. So I'm actually a pretty fun boss because you don't have to, she never has done that. I never have to do that. But I repeat myself all the time to her. She goes, Rob, that's the fourth time you left that message in 20 minutes. I think I have it. Or she'll pick up the phone. I've got that now, thank you. So you have to be somewhat patient to deal with, but at the same time, that's the practice in being with someone like me, is you get to work on your patience. Those of you who feel like you're an inconvenience or you're making people be patient for you, they have to choose to be patient or not. It's not our fault whether they are or aren't, or anybody else's fault whether we're patient or not. And we're learning. And so that's part of our job. So those of you who are looking at letting go of memory, you might want to just let it go. I've worked a lot with Alzheimer's people, and I've one of the things I've noticed is in that interim phase where they're trying to identify and remember, it's really confusing for them. But once they slip over to the other side, they're not in torture any longer. The people who are in torture is their family who want them to remember. They're feeling missed and ignored and left out. So who's really having the torture? Oh, those poor Alzheimer's patients, we should save them. Thank you for feeding, clothing, and sheltering me and letting me totally space out. Most of the clients that I've worked with that have had that, or family who've had that, these are usually really brilliant people who wish to God they could turn their brains off for 60 years, and they finally found a way. And then how dare we, in our rescuing arrogance, go and fix them? What are we really fixing? We're going to make them remember so that they could wish they were dead? Or we're going to help them? There's very many of them, not all of them, it's not a truth across the board, but a great percentage that I've seen really want to like have a break, and that they couldn't tell their truth that they didn't want to be head of the family, they didn't want to do all this work, or they're tired of taking care of everything. So they created a lot of dramas and crisis, and that still didn't do it because everybody still counted on them. It's like that mom syndrome. No matter, everybody's shocked when a mom is sick. Like, how dare you get sick? It's our job to be sick. You're supposed to take care of us. And so usually I'm seeing a great many women with Alzheimer's because they're just so sick and tired, literally sick and tired of doing all this stuff, and nobody listens when they say, I want to quit, I need exhaustion, so they finally start slipping. So it really, the fun part happens is they hire people to do things. Now you finally hire a housekeeper. In fact, you now you have to hire a nurse and a housekeeper, and you said we couldn't even afford a housekeeper, and you're paying for these two things. What is this lie that you've been living under? I'm not saying that Alzheimer's is fun, it isn't a picnic. But we often look at it through our rescuer eyes, and I watch it from all the parts, and I'm seeing a lot of different things happen. So pay attention to what your definitions are, why your memory's holding on to things, what's real and what isn't. Is it really a height or is it a width? Is 24 hours really in a row? I don't think so. In fact, it's now 48 hours in a row, isn't it? They should change all the signs, open 48 hours. Because it isn't 24 anymore, it takes twice as long. Yeah. Couple more minutes. So I'm going to finish with a little meditation for letting go. And you either can or can't do it. Yeah, Chuck. Here's the little meditation chat. Now, this is one of my favorite tools to use with people who are having a hard time letting go. And bear in mind, it might not work the first time for you. You might want to try this a few times. If it seems unpleasant, don't do it, or consider it for later. So no, it's not gentle, but it is gentle. You'll get to see. Just get comfy. And this works best if you just close your eyes and imagine yourself in this perfect temperature darkness. You're hanging by your fingers on the bottom rung of a ladder that goes forever up ahead of you, but you can't see it because it is totally dark, and you're comfortable. It's not either too cold or too warm. You just notice that you're hanging on this ladder and there's nowhere to climb to. You can't see it anyways, and you have no idea what's behind you, but I will tell you that there's nothing behind you. It goes forever. And so let go. Because if you don't let go, you're going to slip off eventually. So let go. And as you let go, you might notice that you're going to want to right yourself like a cat. Okay, what's coming? Get hyper-defensive or get ready or anticipatory. So let yourself fall that way for a while. Let yourself fall until you notice, until you believe that you're in charge of this illusion, and you can fall forever if you'd like. In fact, you are going to fall forever as of this moment. Let yourself fall and fall. There's nothing coming up. There is nothing coming up. There is nothing you will bump into. There is nothing ahead of you but warmth and smooth air coming by you, like floating through warm clouds. And so relax and roll over and cross your legs and put your hands behind your head. Get cozy and fall and let your back fall. Know that there's nothing coming up until you decide, and you can effortlessly and easily land softly. So it's not time yet. Just let yourselves fall. Let yourselves fall and look at your fears. Where do you feel it in your body? Do you feel it in your back because you think your back's coming at it? Do you feel tension in your body? Are your hands really relaxed? How are your legs doing? Let yourselves fall. There are no sounds. There's no whooshing of air. It's just cozy. It's the perfect temperature. It's pitch black. As you fall, you can have either your eyes open or closed in this. You won't notice because it's pitch black. Let yourselves fall. Now, when you do this at home, just if you wish to, just let yourselves go until you feel through with it. And at any moment, we're going to come to a nice soft landing in a few moments. It's up to each one of you when that is. And notice that you will come to a soft landing right in the exact position you're in right now, right in your body, effortlessly and easily will fall right into this spot. And then when you're ready for light, you just open your eyes. And pay attention to how long it took you to right yourself, what you really thought you were going to bump into, where in your body you felt the pain was going to happen, if that's what you anticipated, or this abrupt landing, or what did you really anticipate you might bump into since there was nothing there? What did your imagination come up with? How did it feel to turn over backwards? Were you actually able to do it at the time I said? Some of you might not be. It might take you a while to get to that point where you actually can trust, and it's your own illusion. It's your own meditation. It's a very effective meditation for practicing letting go. And if you'll practice it just on occasion, you'll find that it has amazing translations where you can just where you already anticipate. You got to practice what your body anticipates. You'll understand it, and so you'll start catching yourself when you're afraid. I promise you, the exact same spot you felt when you were doing this meditation is exactly what you feel every time you have a fear. It's in the same spot, and so you're just doing your fear homework, and you're practicing getting back in the moment and trusting that you're in charge. And it's an outrageous meditation, especially if you can do it lying down or do it in a really cozy position. These chairs, I appreciate you sitting in these chairs for 2 hours. They are not comfy. And you did great. So thank you all very much for coming, and I'm glad to have you here.